Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hello, baby! Welcome, rockers, one and all. How you doing? I'm doing great. I'm doing spectacular. You know why? Because we have entered another episode of And the Podcast Will Rock. That is right. It is our weekly show where we dive into the catalog, the discography of one of the greatest rock and roll bands of all time, Van Halen. I am one of your co-hosts, Mark Kammeyer. Join with me, as always, Corey Morissette. Corey, isn't there a birthday that's happening right now, or did happen?
There is, as we record this show. It is the birthday of one Edward Van Halen, born 67 years ago today, and unfortunately passed on. But it was just kind of a happy coincidence that we were recording on this night. And originally, we were going to record with our special guest last week, but work and COVID and a whole bunch of things got in the way. So he agreed to come on this week, and it's kind of apropos. It's on Edward Van Halen's birthday. And it's my absolute pleasure to welcome one and all from the recognized symbol of excellence in rock and roll podcasting, the one and only gunslinger himself, Chris L., is here from Pod of Thunder. Chris, thank you so much for joining us here this evening.
The pleasure's all mine. Appreciate the invite.
Oh, man, because I've mentioned on this show before, but we walk because Pod of Thunder ran, and they started way, way, way back when, and started a little podcast on the classic rock band Kiss and covered every single one of their songs. And broke them down kind of like how we do, just pick a random song every single week. And I fell in love with this podcast. I think I first heard you guys on one of Chris Jericho's show, and I thought, geez, I got to check this out. I wasn't the world's biggest Kiss fan at the time, but I've gone back to episode one, and I'm starting to listen through them all. And your show has really made me into a huge Kiss fan. Like, I really appreciate this band so much more. And I really want to thank you for kind of introducing me to the glory and wonder that is Kiss.
Yeah, they get a lot of heat for the shtick and how, you know, Paul and Gene carry on, but the music's legit. There's certainly a lot of crap in the catalog as well, but the top shelf stuff is exactly that. Measures up with any other, you know, 70s, 80s band, in my opinion.
Absolutely, and I got to say, for Pod of Thunder fans, I am 100% Team Chris when it comes to Got Love for Sale. I hadn't heard that song, and I was waiting until you guys covered it on the show, and I heard Nick's side, and I heard your side, and I'm 100% with you, my friend. Got Love for Sale is a classic Kiss track.
Yeah, and I believe there's demos out there of the Van Halen brothers playing on an early, very demo version to that one, so that kind of adds to the mystique and the appeal of it, but yeah, that's a good one. I think most normal people are on my side, and most psychopaths are on Nick's side with that one.
Now, I love the rapport that Chris has with the Jones brothers. But you mentioned there is kind of a connection between Kiss and Van Halen in that Gene kind of discovered Van Halen and helped him produce some demos way back when. And the rumor, legend even has it that Eddie wanted to join Kiss. And Gene said, no, you stay with Van Halen. Now, both Paul and Eddie at the time said they don't recall that happening. That Gene may be embellishing, which I glean is kind of a thing with Gene Simmons. He tends to embellish maybe a little bit.
What? No. Him?
Yeah, embellish about stories from the past, the majesty of his own penis. Doesn't matter what the subject is. Everything's a fish story with Gene, so...
It's some of my favorite Pot of Thunders is when you call him out on his bullshit, like when he claimed that all of the Beatles wanted to perform on his solo record.
Yeah, all of them, like all four of them.
Yeah, he was going to get all the Beatles to perform on his album.
Yep, they were all set to go, and they just couldn't get it together. So you know,
there was a little trick with John. He just he just couldn't make it.
Right, yeah. He had some other things come up that day, unfortunately. Yeah.
Ooh.
But one of my favorite things of Pot of Thunder is when you guys break down the great songs, it's a great analysis of fantastic music. But when you rip into some of the shittier stuff, like on Gene's solo album, When You Wish Upon a Star, that's one of the most god-awful things I've ever heard in my life. But I just loved listening to you guys eviscerate those tracks.
Yeah, that's what most people say. The worse the song, the better the episode. So
we did pretty well on the couple of episodes that Corey and I just did not think were Van Halen's best. Maybe one of them was last week, maybe not. You guys go back and tune in to see what the verdict was. But yeah, definitely check out Pot of Thunder, man. It's a great show. I finally Corey really got me into listening to this thing, so I finally checked it out and I said, okay, cool. I was already on board with Kiss. The band did amazing things in a four chord structure only. But hearing the dissection of these songs, it's definitely worth a listen. So definitely check that out. And but speaking of, we're talking about Van Halen. It's the Van Halen show. That's what you came in for. That's what we're all here for. And as you know, if you are a frequent listener to the many episodes we have, it's not that many, but you know what I'm saying. We do things just like the Pot of Thunder guys. We spin the wheel and we pick a random song, usually. That is not what we're doing tonight. Corey, what are we doing tonight?
Well, tonight, and we kind of talked about this, whenever we have a special guest on the show, is we would give them the option of either spinning the wheel and taking a random track or giving the guest their choice. And we thought because it was Eddie Van Halen's birthday, it's a little special occasion. So Chris decided, and rightly so, that he would like to maybe talk about one of his favorite tracks. And actually, one of the tracks that got you into Van Halen. Maybe you could tell us that story.
Well, it's actually the track that got me into Van Halen. Do you guys do a reveal of the song, or does everybody knows it by the title? I can reveal what it is, or should I just...
No, you can reveal. They know from the title what it is, yeah.
Okay. As our listeners know from the title anyway, but we, for some reason, act like there's some degree of suspense before we reveal a song, which is really only amongst ourselves because we don't know what we're going to be doing. But back in the late 70s, I was just... Well, in the Detroit area where I grew up, you know, one of the big radio stations was CKLW out of Windsor, Canada. And, that was a station that really sort of introduced me to a lot of different types of music. Because, I mean, you would, on that station you would hear Bad Company followed by the Bee Gees and... You know, kind of a mix of stuff. You never knew what you were going to get, which was one of the appeals of the station. And you know, that combined with all the K-Tel compilation albums my mom would buy me, you know, I had a nice appreciation for a wide variety of music back in the day, but I hadn't quite yet discovered album-oriented rock stations, FM stations, and back in the day, you know, Detroit was a market that could support four of those stations, and one of them had a commercial that had like this cartoon dog that was a superhero, had a cape blowing in the wind, and just you know, so that kind of drew me in. But the soundtrack of it was the main riff to Out of Love Again, and I just remember, you know, once that kicked in and I heard it, it was just like, what the hell is that? I've never heard anything like that on CKLW. And then, you know, what's this radio station on the FM dial? Was at WABX 99.5, and you know, I went and switched over to that, and you know, that's really how I kind of you know, moved away from CKLW. And I was also a big Kiss fan, but 79 was the year where, you know, between Van Halen 2 and like Highway to Hell, those were the two albums that sort of steered me down, you know, the harder rock road. And so yeah, for that reason, the first album somehow eluded me, but you know, I was drawn in by the riff of this song, lured me over to FM radio, and you know, started hearing all the Van Halen songs, including this one. And then later on that year, I, you know, begged my dad to get me a guitar and start taking lessons, and you know, the rest is as they say, history from that. But you know, this song and riff in particular kind of changed my life, certainly changed my you know, life in terms of my musical appreciation.
Wow. And Mark, I know you have mentioned on the show before that Van Halen 2 is actually probably your favorite Van Halen album.
It is, just based, I mean, I don't know why, and that's no disrespect to Van Halen 1 or any of the Van Halen albums out there, but this one in particular, maybe it's just the way it's the album is structured. Perhaps it's just the songs themselves. Not sure what it is. Corey, you gave me a neat little nugget before we were recording that they recorded this album in a week. So that alone gives me such a high appreciation for it, because who would have thought you got a week to record this album? Maybe they didn't even have a week. They just decided, yeah, it's a week and we're done. And that's what you turned out. That's that one in a million shot that it was going to be as spectacular, in my opinion, as it is. Also, it's a follow-up album. You know, it's not even an album later down the road where they're just like, I mean, what are we gonna do? I don't know. We got a week to do this. Sure, let's shit out whatever we got. Like, no. You gave us Van Halen 2. That's amazing. I mean, just a different caliber of musicianship back then, you know. I don't know that we'll see the like. No disrespect to bands out there if you're doing that as well, but yeah, that's what it was.
Hey, you know, maybe there's sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say that the other thing about like what you're talking about there, you know, with the first, well, really any the first three, you know, Fair Warning, which is my favorite Van Halen album. Van Halen 2 is second, but you know, Fair Warning was a little more polished, you know, darker album. And Women and Children First is pretty dark too, but you know, kind of less of a party album and more of a hard rock album, and kind of polished. But those first three albums, to go back to the Kiss comparison, if you listen to the first three Kiss albums, studio albums, you know, there's a reason why like they didn't really take off until Alive came out, because you can kind of hear on those first three releases that they're kind of intimidated being in the studio, that they held back a little bit. not the case whatsoever with Van Halen. I mean, those guys just went in there and incinerated the place, just doing their live set and doing what they do. And, you know, there was no holding back. There was no, reduction in energy or any of that stuff. Those guys just, you know, went into the studio and destroyed it. All of that comes through. They didn't need a live album to sell the excitement of the band. I mean, it was all right there captured in the studio, which is not always the case. In fact, usually not the case with a lot of bands. They're either intimidated or the environment is too sterile for them. They need that energy coming back at them from the crowd. Van Halen just nailed it in all aspects. Not intimidated at all by the studio environment.
You're absolutely right. And I'm wondering if maybe that's due to the fact that a lot of this material they were playing live for years prior. Like, they started in 73 doing these infamous backyard parties. And Out of Love Again was actually one of those songs. It's one of the oldest songs that Van Halen is known to have written. So they maybe had that confidence. Well, David Lee Roth has that confidence to do pretty much anything, right? But maybe they had that confidence going into the studio that, you know, they've already workshopped this material and got a response from it, that they could lay it down on tape. And Mark, you kind of mentioned the shorter timeline. This was kind of a thing in the 70s where it was record an album as quick as you can, get it out, get on the road, tour the world, and then get right back in the studio with no break. That's why you have albums coming out 78, 79, 80. So less than a year after Van Halen 1 comes out, they're in the studio cranking out Van Halen 2, and that's just kind of how the cycle went. But, and I'm talking to two musicians here, does that maybe kind of keep the momentum going in terms of songwriting and stuff? You're not taking a break. You're almost keeping those skills nice and honed because you're using them so quick after the fact. Is there maybe some validity to that?
I feel like it's kind of a double-edged sword, maybe. I think you're right. Yes, the momentum is high, so you want to, or it's hot, so you strike while the iron's hot, right? Maybe because of the momentum, it gave them a lot of energy, as you say. I mean, Van Halen's never been lacking in energy, I don't think, anyway, especially those first few albums. And when the energy is high, you just, you attack it, you know, you feed off of it, you keep going. And so, yeah, that's probably it. But at the same time, some musicians might get a little bit burned out doing that because you can only maintain that high for so long until eventually you have to come down. Maybe that's not their mindset, but it would not surprise me if the sheer fact that they were able to do that is because of that, of said momentum. At least that's my two cents on it.
Yeah, I mean, there also wasn't this pressure to, put out a 70-minute studio album. I mean, these albums were half hour long. The other thing that, that you guys know, you're doing a Van Halen podcast, but most people know this as well, is that, on every album, there's a handful of tracks that they'd been playing since the backyard party days, either, exactly as it was or some amalgamation of it. So they had all this material to draw from. It's not like they had to write an entire album from scratch. As we know, they tossed in a lot of covers, instrumentals, stuff like that. So, I mean, so that kind of took the pressure off of it in terms of, like, having to go in and compose a 12-track, 60, 70-minute album. I mean, they had all that material to draw from. And, they were just, riding it. And they kind of, they did burn out just after putting out five albums in 5 years. And then they took a year off and did 1984, and then they were done with each other. They couldn't stand each other. But, they just, went balls to the wall 5 years in a row, album tour, album tour, album tour, which was kind of the way things were done back then. And, when you're pushing things to the limit and you got these, once in a lifetime group of guys, the results you get speak for themselves. It's timeless, legendary music.
There you have it.
All right, yeah, you're absolutely right. So Out of Love Again is the track tonight from Van Halen 2. You know, which, of course, it's known for more of the singles Dance the Night Away and Beautiful Girls. Out of Love Again was the fifth track on this album, finished off side one for all you vinyl lovers. Released in 1979, like I mentioned, it was one of the oldest songs Van Halen has ever recorded. And just reading a quote from Eddie before we started the podcast, and he talked about how one of the things that pissed him off about Van Halen 1 was you couldn't really hear the drums. And he really wanted to showcase kind of the drums and the bass more. And Mark, I know in earlier shows we talked about how other drummers seem to kind of trash on Alex Van Halen a little bit. I feel that's kind of unnecessary. I think he's a very underrated drummer, and his drumming is what I remember from Out of Love Again. Out of Love Again, when Chris brought it up, it's like I just remember that killer drum playing from Alex, and the bass playing from Michael Anthony too. I think also underrated bass player. Maybe we'll start with Chris on this one. Your thoughts on the rhythm section on this song, which I thought was outstanding.
Oh yeah, I mean, as we get into it, I'll have to pay a close attention to the bass in this one. But you know, the drumming is, I've personally never heard of any drummers bashing on Alex Van Halen. It would surprise me to hear that. I mean, I hear non-musicians or non-accomplished musicians bag on the likes of Ringo Starr, Charlie Watts, those kind of guys, just because they're, you know, simple and not Neil Peart technical, so therefore they must suck or they don't have the ability. But, you know, legitimate drum, you'll never hear a legitimate drummer bash Ringo Starr. You just won't hear it. So I've personally never heard anybody really bash Alex Van Halen. It surprises me to hear that somebody would do that, but his just getting overshadowed by the you know, the dual threat of Roth and Eddie, but you know, the drumming is exceptional on nearly every cut, if not every cut. I mean, he's so unique. He's one of those guys he's got that throwback quality to the swinging drummers out of Britain, you know, the Mitch Mitchells, the Bill Wards, that kind of stuff. He's definitely, you know, people talk about the swing in Van Halen music, and, you know, so the tempo breathes, and he's not just playing these, you know, caveman 4/4 beats, you know, he's putting in little jazz fills and other kinds of things, and he is underrated, absolutely, and just an outstanding drummer, one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think, I should amend that. I don't think it was musicians I was saying that. I think it was like certain rock journalists who maybe, you know, haven't picked up an instrument in their life, who, you know, that kind of thing.
But don't get me started on. Don't get me started on rock journalists. I've got my opinions on them, and you know, they're not very favorable. But you know, rock journalists are like sports reporters. You know, these guys, they wanted to be the people that they're reporting on, but because they didn't have the luck, the work ethic, or the talent to become those people, they sort of passive aggressively take out their frustrations on these accomplished people. And it's just, you know, it's very transparent to me, and to anybody who would bash Alex Van Halen as a musician is just doesn't get it. So you take that opinion for what it's worth, which is nothing, and you just move on to the next one.
Exactly. Mark, you want to chime in on anything else before we play the track here?
I do remember the drumming for this particular track, and I think I've even said before in previous episodes that Alex is certainly not, it's not Alex that is the standout of this band, but it's because he doesn't need to be. He just needs to be the guy keeping it all together as a drummer. And I have said he's a more subtle drummer than, say, some other rock drummers would be. But this one, from what I remember, it's been a little while since I've jammed this whole album, but I do love it, and I do know it pretty well. This one I do remember going in my younger days thinking, like, oh, listen to Alex, man. Like kind of like Hot for Teacher, man. You give Alex that little intro and get to see what he really does. As you say, Chris, utilizing that swing pattern, utilizing showing you exactly, like, hey, look, I can do a lot more than you think I can do. Like, watch. I just don't need to be showy. And this one, I don't think he's necessarily showy. We'll get into it as we listen, but I do remember being like, oh, okay, my ears perking up as the drums come in, because Alex is going a little bit outside of the reserved sort of drum playing, you know what I mean? And you'll hear it as we go through it. But yeah, that's definitely a standout. The bass, on the other hand, I don't know that I actually gave it like a thorough inspection, so I'm excited to listen to that as we go through.
Yeah. All right, well, without further ado, let's get into Out of Love Again from Van Halen 2.
All right.
A little slower intro.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not a drummer, but I've you know, been in tight rehearsal rooms with loud drummers and guys who could play, and listen to what he's doing with the hi-hat on that. It's just like, you know, opening and closing the hi-hat, and like, you know, he's not just whacking the snare drum and then not hitting it again until the next beat. He's doing those kind of, like, you lay the stick down and then you're doing like a couple quarter notes in between, and just that tandem of what he's doing on the snare and hi-hat is just driving everything, you know, and to the point where I'm not even really sure what he's doing with the kick drum, but I'm sure it's pretty awesome too. But when I hear it, especially when the song kicks in, just, you know, that snare work, but then when the whole band comes in, just listen to what he's doing on that hi-hat. It's just driving the whole song. It's incredible, you know.
That's a good word for it, driving. That's what it feels like. Like, it's a drive, like it's going towards something big.
Yeah, and by 1979, you know, a lot of drummers were, you know, full on Bonham, which, you know, mm-hmm. kind of the drummers who were influenced or ended up wanting to play like Bonham are similar to all the guitarists who wanted to play like Eddie Van Halen. It's like they grokked what was on the surface, but they left out all the nuance that made those two guys like legends and, you know, singular musicians. They just, like, in Eddie Van Halen's case, they mimicked all the flash stuff, and then drummers with Bonham were just like all about the power. But you get the power here, but you also have the little nuances in the playing, and just, you know, that harkens back to, you know, all the drummers I referenced before who were all influenced by Buddy Rich, Gene Krupa, all those huge jazz guys who were the flash among the flashiest musicians to ever walk the earth. I mean, that's what jazz to me, or that kind of jazz to me, was, you know. It's all about swinging your dick around as a musician, and it's not a bad thing if you can back it up. And, you know, those guys, those drummers influenced a whole generation, including John Bonham. But everybody who heard Bonham keyed in just on the power of it, and just sort of ignored all that jazz nuance. And but you can definitely hear it in Alex's playing here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm glad you pointed out the technical proficiency in there, too, because like you said, what he's doing with the hi-hat there, like, it's very intricate. It's very precise, and he's nailing it. And I just love Alex Van Halen's snare sound. To me, yeah, it's very distinctive, right? You know a Van Halen song, even if you haven't heard the guitar yet, just by listening to Alex Van Halen's snare sound. And yeah, I'm loving the start of this song, Mark.
Yep.
Which is not easy to do, by the way, to make yourself recognizable by a snare drum.
It's not easy. No, it's
but
it's
you're
not,
right.
And that is the calling card of every great musician, is like you can tell it's them playing, and and yeah, people have definitely come around to that, because that was like something I always thought to myself, that he had such a distinct snare sound. And then, you know, once the internet started coming around, and go on musician message boards and forums and stuff like that, and I started seeing more and more people talking about that, I was like, oh, cool, I'm not the only one who picked up on that, because you know, there's even videos out there like showing the taping patterns and all this stuff, and precisely how to tune a snare drum to get Alex Van Halen's tone. It's like, so people were picking up on that. So definitely a cool thing.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's keep going on this one. Sorry, I cut it off a little quick there, but I just want to talk about David Lee Roth for a little bit, because on our Twitter, there's kind of this going back and forth between Sammy versus Dave. And the perception is always that David Lee Roth doesn't sound very good. And live, especially if you listen to the live album they did in 2012, whatever, the Tokyo Dome one. Live, he was more of the showman, right? He didn't really care about his vocals. But I think Dave sounds fucking fantastic on this track.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I think a lot of people, their opinions of him were a little sullied because, you know, whether or not he was, fired or he quit on his own, the perception is that he walked out on the band and just decided, you know, that he was bigger than the band, was going to do his own thing, and I think that soured a lot of people on him and changed their perception of it. But, you know, his studio vocals and all the, you know, six studio albums they did, you know, Diver Down, I think they ran out of gas a little bit, and then they picked it up again on 1984. But you know, he's not going to be a he's not a Jeff Tate, he's not a Bruce Dickinson, he's not, you know, any of these guys who have that extreme power and exact intonation of their voices. But, you know, for what they needed him to do and what he wanted to do, he pretty much nailed it. And also, as you guys, I'm sure, agree, a very underrated lyricist as well.
Oh, yeah, so we talked about that on
previous
shows.
Sometimes his... sometimes his lyrics... I kind of go, all right, you're going for something there, Dave. I'm not sure what it was, but he absolutely has his moments here. I mean, look, you say what you want about Dave's vocals. I've said my two cents about it many a time, and I'll keep saying it. But I mean, you're not going to mistake him for anybody else. He found his niche, his whatever you say the word, and stuck with it. And in this, he really is going balls to the wall on it in a good way, like right off the bat. So far, no complaints from me whatsoever.
I know, talking about the lyrics, we did a couple episodes ago, we did Honey Baby Sweetie Doll from A Different Kind of Truth. And that was what I loved the lyrics of that. And Mark was kind of like, what the hell is that? But I'm like, no, I totally get it. This is almost kind of Bon Scott-esque, what he's kind of going for in that song. So I totally agree. David Lee Roth, a completely underrated lyricist.
Yeah, he's got a lot of great lyrics on Different Kind of Truth, which to me, that album was a triumph. You know, it was a, and you want to talk about energy, and that's another thing, like people bitching about, oh, it's all old material and they're just rehashing stuff. It's like they did that on every album they ever put out with Roth. I mean, right. All this 60 to 70% of all Van Halen you've ever heard with David Lee Roth in the band, they had all that stuff in one form or another when they were playing backyards in California. So it's all rehash shit, and you didn't seem to mind it back in the day, and now you're all old and bitter, and you're casting dispersions at it for no good reason. So, you know.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it, you know? It's like when a band finds their formula, like, use that formula. It's like you can grow, but I mean, the formula, if it works, there's a reason why.
Plus, well,
I was just going to point out that the song we're doing tonight here is 6 years old because they wrote it around 72, 73, and it came out in 79. So, just to Chris's point, this song alone here is 6 years old.
Plus, you know, when you're kicking around in backyard parties and you got all this material together and you somehow make it big. You bring some of that material in with a top flight producer like Ted Templeman, and he's gonna hone it into something. You know, you bring some of that material in. It's like, you know, you hear it all the time in these like classic album shows and whatever. It's like, what was that? Play that again. And it's like, oh, it's just warming up with something. And like, no, play that again. And then like, okay, put that here. Let's blend this together. And you work with a professional producer, and suddenly, again, all that material suddenly becomes not only viable, but some of the best tracks ever recorded in rock. So, why leave all that in the trash heap and feel like you got to write brand new stuff every time? It's just not necessary.
All right.
Well, let's keep going here.
The other thing, I never, believe it or not, of all the times I've heard this, I've never really made this connection, but like if you listen to almost the whole structure of the song, it's based on three note or three chord segments. So like the main riff is three notes, and then a second set of three notes with the last note a lower than the first one. And then you got the bom, bom, bom. Bom, 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 bom. It's all a collection of three-note, three-chord progressions that they just, you know, assembled together. And, you know, it's all, everything's in threes musically, which is kind of cool. And it's simple, you know. I mean, that main riff is like, you know, you see these 4-year-old kids on YouTube are playing Yngwie Malmsteen stuff, you know, at age 4. This riff is, like I said, three notes. Doesn't get any more simple, but is there, you know, this to me is way more devastating than any kind of full-on shred guitar piece. I mean, it just, like, you know, hits you right in the chest and you know. Just the simplicity of it is really coming through to me while listening to it this way.
Well, that's a great observation. We've talked about that before. We always kind of compare it to the guitar solo from Cult of Personality, where it's just notes, right? And just all over the place. And it's like, you need something that kind of fits the song. And just three notes and just pounding it out, and just with everything and how it works together. Mark, you're a musician. You could probably speak more coherently about that than I can.
I mean, what do I say? Sometimes less is more. And nobody really, I mean, there are a few bands that really stuck to that mentality because it worked for them. Van Halen's no exception. Sure, Eddie can shred. Eddie can give you all the notes in the world. Sometimes he does, but he does it in a way that's going to fit the format of the song that they're presenting. And sometimes the structure of the song they're presenting is very simple. You know, a three-chord structure. It's it's so simple. But I mean, at the same time, kind of like Chris just said, there's still a devastation to it because there's power behind, there's purpose behind those three chords. This is just one example of many Van Halen has.
Yep, absolutely. All right, let's keep going here. I almost don't want to stop it because I'm enjoying it so much, but they're just,
I know, looking. I know. We're just like just jamming over here, but there's like, there's so much to dissect from that. That bass line for sure. Like, and once my ears finally tuned into it, I was like, oh, I see what you're doing, Mike. I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah.
Just walking down that thing. And more and more, I keep tuning into Alex, man. It's just like, I take it all back. He is standing out in this song whatsoever, but in a good way, in a fantastic way. Chris, the word you use, there's a drive to it. I mean, this song, just it doesn't stop driving. It's all a drive. Yeah, man, I'm like you, Corey. It's like, keep playing it, keep playing it. I want to hear more.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like he threw in that, you know, dual cowbell hit in there. Just that you know, came out of nowhere. And
hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
We're about to hear, just like right before, to introduce a solo, just a single shot on the ride cymbal bell, and just a kind of creativity that you don't hear anymore nowadays. And the overall production on this compared to one is a lot cleaner. There's a lot more space going on. The guitar isn't like heavy phaser like it is on the first one. So I think that kind of opens things up, and the drums aren't overproduced. So I think, you know, pulling off a lot of that reverb and stuff like that cleans it up, and you can hear there's a lot more separation. Even though, as we know, on the first album, the guitars are panned hard right. There's separation that way. But in terms of this, it's the separation between all of the instruments together that you can, there's clarity to all of them. You can hear, like Mark just said, it's like, oh wow, I can hear what's going on with the bass because everything's not overproduced. It doesn't all blend together because there's too much going on. It's a better produced album than one, in my opinion. It's just a lot cleaner, a lot more space to it, and that's why you can hear the drums and the bass a lot better than on the first one.
Yeah, that's a great call. And you mentioned that kind of cymbal right before the guitar solo comes in here. They played the song, of course, all through 1979, but they also played it like a dozen times on the 2012 tour. And I remember an interview with Wolfgang Van Halen where he said right before Dad's solo on Out of Love Again, he would just give like a little note, just kind of like a little that would always make his dad smile. And It just reminded me of that being Eddie Van Halen's birthday, and being this is the song we're listening to, that there's that kind of space there, and Wolfie would throw in a note just to make his dad smile. So again, just kind of apropos, we're doing this song on Eddie's birthday here. So we're going into the solo now, and I can't wait to hear this. So let's keep going here.
And
sorry, Mark. Go ahead, buddy.
I was just gonna say, all I was gonna say was, you can keep cowbell classy. It's not just Blue Oyster Cult that does it. Van Halen did it too.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, that whole solo section is just, that's, you know, three musicians just locked in. You know, Alex is doing his best Mitch Mitchell imitation. It's basically, it's essentially Jimi Hendrix experience, but, you know, on steroids decades later. And, you know, and that's another thing is, like, they didn't feel the need to overdub a rhythm guitar. It's just, you know, you don't need it. Just have the, you know, the three guys playing, and you don't need to clutter it up with unnecessary stuff when guys are playing this great. You know, just let them, like, put a mic up and let them play, you know, and just let them rip. And that's exactly what they did. I mean, that solo section is among the most exciting segments in the entire Van Halen catalog to me.
Oh, I agree totally. And as a non-musician, when you were talking, Chris, about the separation, I really noticed it in that section, because the drums were front and center, the bass was front and center, and the guitar was front and center. Like, everything was just had room to breathe, and you could appreciate it all. And as a non-musician, I just really appreciated that. What did you think, Mark, of that whole solo section?
That, kids, is how you play a solo that fits the song. It's necessary for the song. I reiterate everything Chris just said. It's just three dudes just, here's a mic, go. Just play there. This didn't feel like, oh, it's Eddie solo, so everyone, you know, get out of the way and just, you know, be background noise while he plays. No, this felt like it's Eddie solo. Everyone keep up. And they did. Because it's just like Michael didn't fall away. He's right there, just you know, doing laps with his fingers there, and then just, Alex is absolutely just holding it. It's like, you keep up with me, bro. Can you do it? And so it's almost like it's not even a solo. This is a trio. The only one that took a break or took a smoke break, what have you, is his Dave. Smoke break. Never mind. Anyway, what else could I possibly add to it than, you know, just listen to it, man. That's just beautiful.
Yeah. Dave was banging some chick in the vocal booth while all that was going on. So.
Yeah, that's what he was doing.
All right, let's keep it rolling here. Doing all you can to make me sad. All right, Out of Love from Van Halen 2. Chris, much like your show, I know you guys have Sweet Surrender or Kick in the Crotch. Here, I know in the Van Halen days you did Hell or Hallelujah. I was kind of thinking, because I got to rip off Pot of Thunder whenever I can, because it is the gold standard when it comes to rock and roll podcasting. Like, what is there Van Halen related that we could vote on? So we have It's all Sammy stuff, unfortunately, for tonight. But it's either we're taking it higher and higher from dreams from 5150, or this dream is over from unlawful carnal knowledge. So we'll go around the horn. You give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down, and I'll play the clip. I'll start first. Out of Love again from Van Halen 2. That's what dreams are made of. As far as I'm concerned, this is Van Halen, a perfect Van Halen song. It encompasses everything I love about the David Lee Roth era of Van Halen. Everything was just fantastic. Great driving beat. I enjoyed the lyrics. I thought Dave sang great. The screeches sounded fantastic. The solo was amazing. Alex was at the top of his game, and I really enjoyed the bass. I know I just got done reading the Noel Monk book, and he was talking about how Eddie, you know, would complain that, oh, I had to teach Michael Anthony how to teach, you know, how to play a solo, and they wanted to cut him out of royalties starting around 1984. But I thought Michael Anthony, again, from a non-musician, sounded fantastic on this track. So I'm giving this a very hearty That's What Dreams Are Made Of. Let's go to Mark next. What did you think of Out of Love Again?
It is no dream, if you will it. Something I just want to point out is Dave going into those the head voice howling in between singing in his, you know, regular range, you know, just a you know, going real high, you know, that was a bad impression, but you get what I'm saying. Like, that's not easy to do, but he makes it sound like he just does it every, like, willy-nilly, and maybe he does, maybe he did, but to make it sound good like he did, to fit the song, to actually, you know, go from regular vocal range to the high, head voice, that's back and forth like that, is not easy. Any vocalist will tell you that, and if they say it is easy, they're either lying or there's something impressive, or maybe they're Bruce Dickinson, I don't know. But this song is such a groove. It's such a rocking groove. You know, how could you not appreciate this? I would dare say I'd put this song in some of the upper echelon of Van Halen tunes that are just good rocking songs, just good songs to rock. And this is one of those tunes that utilizes every single member of the band doing what they do best all together. You know, there's no weakest link in this, in my opinion, I don't think. So this is a winner for me. This is absolutely a winner. But Chris, what say you?
Not much suspense here.
A tad academic thing.
It was rhetorical, but we wanted to hear it anyway.
Yeah, no, you got to make it official. But you know, like I said, I mean, this is literally my first taste of Van Halen back in the day, and just when it makes that kind of impression on you with three notes in a TV commercial, it's just like, you know, of course, that's what dreams are made of, and it literally changed my life in terms of, sent me down some new roads in terms of the music I was listening to, inspired me to beg the old man to buy me a guitar, you know, literally changed my life. And you know, it all started with that riff, and then when I heard the whole song and the rest of the album. That's the other thing I wanted to mention is when I first heard Dance the Night Away on the radio, I thought it was like a Motown, like, I was like, what Motown group is this? And it's pretty cool that they're getting with the times and adding some rock guitar to what they're doing. I thought it was like an updated Motown song. I really did. And, you know, with the backing vocals and everything. And then when I found out it was Van Halen, that just sealed the deal for me. I mean, it was, just invigorating, exciting, life-changing, all of that. And it's not, you know, that's not hyperbole. It's just a fact for me. And just amazing stuff. And you know, his passing a couple years ago, you know, you knew it was coming based on all the reports and stuff, but like when you see that in your push notifications, it's just like it just stops you in your tracks, and you just, you know, you're kind of, I don't know, it just affects you forever. And you know, the joy this guy gave me, and you guys, I'm sure, as well, with his music, is just, you know, he was a gift from wherever he came from, and a gift to us all. And this is a really good recorded example of that.
Very well said. And I know when Eddie passed, in my day job, I work as a community television producer, and we do a show called The Vinyl Countdown at a record shop, where the guys bring on their favorite vinyl records and talk about it. And we're halfway through shooting a show, and I got the notification, like, we have to stop. We're not doing this show anymore. Grab your favorite Van Halen record. We got to do a tribute to Eddie, because the world just kind of stopped for me mm-hmm. that day, because it felt like somebody I greatly admired had passed away. And that's one of the reasons why I called up Mark out of the blue. We used to podcast on different topics like movies and stuff, and I just said, hey, you know, I'm ripping off this format from Pot of Thunder because they do it so well, but let's do it with Van Halen, because there's so many great tracks. And Pot of Thunder gave me a gift of appreciating Kiss and becoming more of a Kiss fan. And if we can maybe do that for somebody when it comes to Van Halen, and we kind of already are with my wife, who didn't really like Van Halen, is listening to our show going, hey, that song was really good. Hey, that next song was really good. Mm-hmm. You know, even if just one person gets turned on by this band from something we're introducing to them, God, man, is that worth it? Because, yeah, this band means the world to us. Eddie meant the world to us. And this is just a perfect example of Van Halen. Mark, how about some of your thoughts here?
I mean, it's absolutely what else could I possibly say about the great Eddie Van Halen and just the band in general? But it is Eddie's birthday. From wishing you a happy birthday from beyond the grave, here we are, gone but not forgotten whatsoever. Obviously, we're doing a whole podcast about the legacy of the band and its music and what it's meant to me. What I really enjoy about this is that Chris was kind enough to give us sort of the backstory into why this song, like what this song means to him. And it's, you mentioned that it not only gave you the introduction of Van Halen, but then it was also, okay, cool, now I gotta go get a guitar, I gotta learn how to play, I gotta, like, I'm full of inspiration to play. And Eddie Van Halen did that for me. I would not be playing guitar right now. I probably would not have gone the musician's route maybe so soon or at all had it not been for this guy, for this band. And, you know, and I appreciate that. And I think he did that for a lot of us out there, a lot of musicians out there. This whole band, I mean, it's just, what more could you ask for than the gift of some music that takes you someplace, connects with you on a personal level? And say what you want about the content of the lyrics, whatever. They're all about partying. They're all about whatever have you. No, it's not about that. It's about connecting to the music, feeling it, the rhythm, listening to the solo and being like, that's a rock god. I must learn the ways. Or feeling like, oh man, the rhythm section is just so, like, I feel it. I want to do that. I want to be a part of that. That's what it's all about, man. Music is love. Music is appreciation. This band was full of both of those things, and so we're honored to help give back in some small way. And if, as Corey said, I reiterate, if we can help introduce people to this band just by explaining what the band means to us, what these songs mean to us, even the songs that maybe aren't so good in our opinions, someone out there will think, well, that's wrong. I really love that. Cool. I'm a fan now. That's the goal. That's the appreciation. And we appreciate you. We appreciate all of you. We appreciate this band. And we appreciate awesome guests like Chris. I want to thank you, Chris, for being on the show, man. So where can the good people find you if they want to check out all the stuff that you're doing?
Go to podofthunder.com is our website, and then you know, look for us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. For those who are not familiar with the show, just want to reiterate that we did in fact exhaust the KISS catalog. We made it through some 280 studio cuts on. We did just their studio cuts. We didn't do live albums, but we did do the four solo albums, and we did them all at random. And so we're still going on. What we do is we have a submission capability on the website where you can send us a song you'd like us to analyze. And so since I think I want to say the KISS stuff wrapped up in 2018, 2019, so for the past 3 years or so, we've just done random tracks submitted by our listeners. Occasionally, we don't like what the listeners have submitted, so we just, you know, pick our own off the list or just pick them out of nowhere, do some themed months based on, you know, certain things. February is February, songs inspired by the vibe of Lou Rawls and tying in with the romance of February and Valentine's Day and all that. And, you know, just trying to keeping it going because, like, when we started out, we're just like, yeah, let's do the whole KISS catalog because we're really just going to do 10 episodes before we get bored and get sick of each other and get discouraged because nobody's listening. And it turned out to be quite the opposite. And when we got to the end of the KISS catalog, people just wanted us to continue. And that just seemed like the reasonable way to go. So we're still at it. And, you know, 450 episodes, I think we're up to now. So check it out. There's a lot of variety in there. And hopefully you like it as much as these guys liked it.
Okay. It's my favorite podcast, and I know I have drunkenly added some songs to the listener submission list. None have come up yet, but I'm hopeful. I actually put a Wolfgang Van Halen song on the listener submission list, so I'm hoping you guys may check that out, because I really like that album, and I thought Wolfie did a great job. So if you ever do Mr. Ed from Wolfgang Van Halen, I know I put that on the submission list. One I haven't put on yet, though, but I'm hoping right around Canada Day you can convince Mr. Jericho to come back on the show and finally do Lovin' Every Minute of It by Loverboy, which is like the Canadian national anthem in some parts.
That trust me, that whether it's with Jericho or not, that will happen. Because Nick is also a big fan, to the point where I'm tempted to do a Loverboy podcast about their stuff. You know, another band that gets slagged on, you know, because they've got, you know, leather-clad man ass on their most favorite famous album. But those guys are legit, man. They've got a ton of great material, and that one will definitely happen at some point. So make no mistake about it, that one will be featured. That's an epic tune.
Absolutely. Now, if you ever need a co-host for your All Loverboy podcast, give me a shout, because I'm a Canadian, so I am all in on Loverboy. I love that fucking band. But I know we're into the podcast here, and I kind of floated this idea earlier, but because it's Eddie Van Halen's birthday, and because I have two guitar players on the show here tonight, and I'm not a guitar player, and we originally said we're not going to do any instrumentals because too hard to kind of analyze, right? But I have two guitar players here, and we have Eddie Van Halen's birthday. Would you guys be willing to listen to Eruption and give us just a quick analysis of what you're hearing with Eruption?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Twist my arm a little bit, you know, hold a gun to my head, force me to do it. But yeah, I'll agree to that. No problem.
All right, folks, you're getting a bonus content here tonight. We're getting a little bit of Eruption from Van Halen 1. So you just heard Running with the Devil, which is a song we covered on our very first episode. Imagine, you know, it's the 70s, you're popping the vinyl on the turntable. The next song you hear is this. Wow, Chris, let's start with you. You're our guest. Your impressions of Mr. Van Halen and Eruption.
Well, like I said, the first album kind of eluded me in real time. You know, I was born in 66, so I was, you know, alive when all this stuff was coming out. But I didn't get a taste of it until 79 with the second album, so then I had to double back to the first album. So I think that the impact of Eruption was a little diminished for me for that reason. I mean, had I, you know, been on board when it first came out, it probably would have, you know, hit me a little harder, but still, regardless, you know, for a guy who's my age, who was, you know, 12, 13, when these albums were coming out, absolutely my generation's Hendrix in terms of, you know, you put it on and you're just like, what the fuck is this? Nobody's ever done this before. What planet is this guy from? And that's, you read about, I was alive, you know, I was 0 years old when Hendrix came out. And so I wasn't around, able to appreciate it when it was coming out, but that's what you hear people say about, Hendrix is just like, this guy was just placed here from another planet. I mean, where is this sound coming from? What's he doing? And yeah, it's just mind boggling and just, you know, inspired millions of guitarists, musicians really to, you know, take things to the next level. You know, for me, it inspired me, but by the same token, it's like, I never aspired to learn Eruption because I was just like, this is beyond my capabilities. In fact, I proved it to myself with, back in the day, they used to have these things, they were called Starlix sets. It was like you'd get a cassette and a little booklet of, you know, tablature, and so you could learn solos of your heroes. And I got the Starlix Van Halen. First one was the solo of Push Comes to Shove, you know, and I'm sitting there listening to the cassette. I'm, you know, 14, something like that. Listening to the cassette, trying to match it up with the tablature, and then even more impossible, trying to play it on my guitar. And I'm just like, 5 minutes in, I was just like, you know what? I could probably learn all these notes in about 20 years, but even if I learn all the notes, I'm never going to get all those little nuances. And so at that moment, I was like, you know what, for better or for worse, I got to learn how to play my own style and sound like myself. So he actually, with his stuff being so impossible, he inspired me to take the easier road and sound like myself. And for that, I, you know, I thank him for that. I'm not sure anybody who's ever heard me play is thanking anybody for that, but for me, inspired me to develop my own style. Because as we know, you know, Van Halen, he always talks about how Clapton was his biggest influence, and he learned the crossroads solo off of Wheels of Fire note for note. But he doesn't sound anything like Eric Clapton. He developed his own style, learned the material, but then, you know, became his own player. And then in my own roundabout way, that's the same trajectory I took after listening to him. So inspiring in so many ways. And like I said, when you're hearing those albums come out in real time, or in my case, double back a year later, you're just like, what the fuck is this? What solar system is this guy from? It's just, you know, just leaves you slack jawed, and it just makes, inspires you to want to do something that cool with your life.
Well said. And Mark, you were one of those guitar players inspired by Eddie Van Halen. What are your thoughts on Eruption?
Well, as a quick sidebar, I thought this whole time the Canadian national anthem was Sunglasses at Night by Corey Hart, but that's just me.
Close second. Close second. Actually, Working for the Weekend is probably the Canadian national anthem.
All right, fair enough, fair enough. But this is the first album that I ever purchased myself by Van Halen was the Best of Volume 1. I've talked about what that album has meant to me just from the inside cover alone. And the album starts with Eruption. So, needless to say, my journey into Van Halen that really, I mean, I had heard them before, obviously, songs picked throughout the years from the radio or from wherever, from like my parents playing them. But really, that was my first journey into the depths, was that album. And when it starts with Eruption, how could I possibly go any further than that? You know, as far as I was concerned, that is the quintessential, like, this is me. I'm Eddie Van Halen. Nice to meet you. Listen to this. And for those of us out there that were becoming musicians back then, there was a small group. We knew that you want to be a great guitar player, you got to learn that. You got to learn how to play Eruption. And if you can do that, you can do anything. In hindsight, what a bunch of dummies. Because that was the impossible dream, playing Eruption. It, to this day, I mean, I probably could pick out a few dudes that could play it. But like Chris said, they'll never capture the nuance that that Eddie was able to bring out in playing this, in creating, composing, if you will, this grand. I don't even want to call it a solo, because it's just a composition of Eddie just letting a rip, you know. And if you can play Eruption, if you're a guitar player and that's your goal, is to learn how to play this song, more power to you. That's great. But if you don't quite get there, if you don't quite match it, it's okay, because you're not supposed to. This is quintessential Eddie Van Halen. This is his style. This is his thing. This is his design, if you will. But I'll never forget that, listening to it for the first time, and then just listening to it over and over and over and over again till I just, you know, destroyed the CD, because this track is just such a huge inspiring piece of just material for any musician back then, but especially me. I dare not venture into the realm of can I play it, because that's all folly. And honestly, I wouldn't want to, because I appreciate it just as a listener, just as a musician tipping my cap, because this is just, it's brilliant what this is. And it's just, that's all I can say about it. It's just brilliant. And I don't need to replicate it. It needs no replication whatsoever. It is what it is. And it will be here for as long as people care to hear Eddie Van Halen.
Absolutely. And as a non-musician on the panel, I appreciate it on that level too. And just thinking about Eddie instrumentals, I always kind of gravitate to 316, because there was one he wrote for his son, and I'm a dad, and that's one I always kind of related to, just because it feels like a song written by a father for a child. And so emotionally I connected that one. But technically, you listen to something like Eruption, it's like, holy motherfuck, like, what the hell? Like Chris said, what planet is this guy from? Because, like, you know, who can do that? And it's just unbelievable. And I'm so glad we had this opportunity on Eddie Van Halen's birthday to talk about a great Van Halen track, because we haven't had one in a couple of weeks, Mark. And B, to get your guys' opinion on Eruption, and to have Chris on. I am such a huge fan of Pot of Thunder, and I really appreciate you coming on the show. You made me a Kiss fan from your show, and I'm just kind of hoping we can reciprocate for somebody with Van Halen. And just thank you so much for taking the time tonight to join us here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Appreciate the invite, and like I said, it just like we were supposed to do. I was supposed to be on the inside episode last week, and something just got crossed up with me schedule wise, and I just asked if we could postpone it a week, not even realizing that it was going to be Eddie's birthday, and just you know, that's the kind of thing that you know, that kind of serendipity is, as I get older, I come to appreciate it for what it is, that it's like kind of almost a divine turn of events that gives you know, three Van Halen fans like us the opportunity to talk about him on his birthday, even though he's no longer here. So that's pretty cool stuff, man.
Now, real quick, what are your thoughts on Inside? Would you have given it this dream is over, or is that what dreams are made of?
You know, before I listened to the episode, I was like, because I owned 5150. I mean, I will say that there was that excitement about the new Van Halen with Sammy, and you know, there's some good stuff on there. I mean, you know, the Good Enough opening it up was pretty damn exciting and stuff. But like I said, I owned 5150. I couldn't tell you how Inside went. I'm not even sure I listened to it more than once ever. And that's kind of the way it is with some of the Kiss stuff. Like we've analyzed every Kiss song in there. And then when I sort of retweet about the old episodes, I'm like, I have no recollection of what that song goes like. I couldn't hum the melody to you at all. I don't know what it is. It's just completely forgettable. So then I listen to the episode, and I'm just like, yeah, the dream is over here for me. And like we talked about, you know, I was perfectly willing to come in and do the random thing, because I think that adds to the sort of appeal and excitement and forces you to speak off the cuff about stuff. But as I said before we started recording, I think we couldn't risk drawing what is that song I referenced off of the third one, Me Say I, or whatever the hell the title of it is. But it's just like we couldn't risk getting a dog on Eddie's birthday. So I'm glad you guys gave me the opportunity to make the selection.
Absolutely. And that seat is always open, my friend. If you ever want to come back on the show and spin the wheel and take your chances, we'd love to have you back.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we'll return the favor as well, because it's one of the things we're going to want to do more of this year is get more of our fellow podcasters on, and hopefully, you know, other people, you know, prominent musicians and stuff. We're going to do a lot more reaching out to people to, you know, be guests on the show and participate in what we've got going on. So we'll definitely return the favor at some point this year.
Oh, that'd be amazing. I know we have to introduce Mark to some Lover Boy, I think.
I know Lover Boy.
Yeah, but when you're consuming it with other people who are way into Lover Boy, it changes you. It changes your perception.
That's
of it.
So fair enough. Good. I'm ready to be consumed by Lover Boy.
It's good, man.
That's right. You know, you heard it here.
It's they are they're the shit, man. I'm a big fan, and like I said, loving every minute episode is absolutely happening at some point in the future, so get ready for it.
Awesome.
Well, we are ready. We're always ready. That is the show, you guys. But if you want to reach out to us, you can find us at Podcast Will Rock on Twitter. We love getting responses. We're getting a lot of responses from you guys. Always check out the rockin' polls that we have put up. It's usually always Sammy versus Dave, but you never know. There might be some more to it, but definitely check that out. Tweet to us. Go to the website and the podcast will rock.com. We've got merch. That's right. NFT Public merch. Check that out. Get you some shirts, get you some tanks, some hoodies, because it's still cold out there. Corey can tell you more than I can about that. You got to stay warm. I know I got some hoodies coming my way pretty soon, so definitely check that out. Check out our website in case you miss an episode. We got it posted all there, and be on the lookout. We might actually start posting some other things going on. Maybe I got some gigs coming up, and you're curious if you're in the Nashville area. We'll post about it. Keep a weather eye out. And, Corey, if they want to reach you on the social medias, where can they find you?
They can find me at CD Morset. And, keep the conversations coming. I know we had a good one about Inside. We had one fan who really digs that track and thought it was kind of encompassed everything he liked about Van Halen, and a bunch of other people that said, really? Inside, not so much. I know on the poll, most people agree with me and Mark that Inside was a miss, but that's the beautiful thing about Van Halen. Every track's going to have its fans, right? And there's people out there that loved Inside, and that's great. But I imagine we're not going to get a lot of negativity when it comes to Out of Love Again and Eruption as well. Two absolutely classic Van Halen tracks.
Yeah.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so. We mentioned before, check out Pod of Thunder. Definitely want to check out that that podcast. Wonderful. Chris, do you have any social medias you can direct the people to if they want to shout at you?
Yeah, just search Pod of Thunder on we're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Come find us and get involved in the conversation. Our listeners like to discuss every episode and other topics we post about, so it's fun, and that's what it's all about. Just a way to have some fun in this crazy world we've got going on today. So.
Fun is the name of the game. Shout it out loud. And you can find me at Mark the Bat on Twitter and Instagram. Definitely hit me up if you've got your complaints about my thoughts, or if I'm wrong about numbers and stuff. I love hearing it. Let's interact. Let's keep interacting. And let's keep rocking, because that's what we do here, celebrating Van Halen on And the Podcast Will Rock podcast. And we will rock you later.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzenes.
Kayla Itzenes. I'm Kayla Itzenes, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.